I love that brief reading that we hear today by Frederick Buechner. Buechner is the author, if you're not familiar with him, he's the author of several well-known spiritual books and novels over the last few decades, and he is also a Presbyterian minister. And what I most appreciate from the passage that we hear today is how he makes a bridge between what seems like a distant and ancient story in the Bible that we'll hear a little more about. And in just a few words, just a few examples, he opens up a spiritual truth for us, the truth that occasionally, in the presence of someone, we witness, in his words, something so incandescent, so alive, that it transfigures the human face, that it's almost beyond bearing. I imagine if you pause for a moment, I bet you can recall just one of those moments in your life of a transfigured face that for at least a moment there was an offer of a glimpse of glory, a glimpse that will be forever memorable. Of all of the strange and amazing stories in the collection of strange and amazing stories that we call the Bible, today's story, which is called the Transfiguration, to me is one of the stranger stories about Jesus from the Gospels. This last week, before we enter the weeks of preparation for Easter, which the church calls Lent, and the end of that time, which the church calls Epiphany, at the beginning of the year, we have this peculiar Transfiguration Sunday, and it serves in a way, I believe, as a culmination of Epiphany manifestations of the light of Christ. And the scene is called the Transfiguration because of how the appearance of Jesus was changed, was transfigured. And let's face it, this extraordinary mountaintop scene with three disciples and Jesus is quite odd. It's a distortion from reality in its everyday sense. Unusual characters show up in unexpected places, in unexpected times, a bit of a time warp, you might say. Jesus takes on this strange and heightened experience. A voice from heaven brings a message. It's so startling and so strange, and Peter's response to it makes it even a little stranger. Oh, it's good that we're here. Let's build three dwellings. Let's make a booth, pitch a tent, build a shack. And at first, its initial strangeness makes it difficult to connect with the story, I think. But it reveals very important spiritual truth. The story, as we hear it, describes how this select group of three disciples, the inner circle, we'll call them, go up a mountain with Jesus. The mountain is unnamed, but tradition has called it Mount Tabor. Sound familiar? Yeah. Anyone here from Tabor? You should be radiant this morning if you are. They go up this Mount Tabor and they witness this astounding meeting. They experience a vision or a visitation, really, of these two great symbolic figures from Hebrew history. Two figures who, between the two of them, actually serve to sum up the entirety of their history and tradition, the law and the prophets. Moses, that great liberator from bondage, the lawbringer who went up a mountain to receive the law from God. Elijah, the greatest of all of the prophets, who went up a mountain and met the presence of God in the still small voice. Elijah, for whom a seat and a cup are still kept at every Passover Seder to this day. And on this mountain, somehow, we're not sure how, the disciples see and somehow recognize these two pivotal figures who encapsulate the history of their people. These two figures meeting and conferring with their own friend and teacher, Jesus, who now himself is radiant with the presence of God. You know, those words are the same words that describe how the Holy of Holies in the temple appeared when the presence of God descended upon it. Same language. And if all of that was not yet enough, just like what happened at the baptism in Jordan by John the Baptizer, a voice from heaven speaks, confirming Jesus' identity once again. This is my beloved child. Listen to him. That symbolism that might puzzle us and distance us, for the original audience, they could not have seen it and gotten it more powerfully and clearly. This teaching, preaching, and healing Jesus that you've been hearing or reading about, this Jesus is the embodiment of everything that you've been waiting for, everything that we've been waiting for. This is God's beloved and chosen. Pay attention. Listen. And it is in the middle of this amazing and overwhelming vision that Peter's response is so striking and funny. He fumbles at hospitality in a way. An awkward response, but isn't it understandable? These guys are so important and so big, so famous. We have to do something, so have a seat. Let me build you a house. What's happening is so awesome. Can we capture it and stay here forever? But we all know mountaintop experiences don't work that way, do they? They don't come when we call, and they don't sit still while we're trying to pose for a selfie. That's right. I got an amen, almost. But they do imprint themselves upon our very souls. For a lot of us, I think this story of the Transfiguration, if you came up in a church tradition, might be a little bit like a side story, maybe even a detour or distraction from the main story, a lesser theme, perhaps. Unless you happen to come up through an Eastern Orthodox Christian tradition, where it has much greater emphasis. It's a scene, this scene and story is exceeded only by one other scene itself, and that is the resurrection itself. This scene is second only to the resurrection itself in its spiritual importance in the tradition. For our Orthodox Christian sisters and brothers, when they consider the Transfiguration, they see the primary symbol of spiritual life. Often Western Christianity, Roman Catholicism in particular, we might note, the dominant theme is the image and the picture of the suffering and crucifixion. For the Orthodox, it's the Transfiguration. This brilliant, radiant energy of God shining through the humanity of Jesus on the mountaintop is not just a story about Jesus, but symbolically it is the goal and possibility of every life. A spiritual principle so important it has its own theological word, theosis. Theosis. In short, through this person, this work of Jesus, and through the grace of God, our own journey is one that is infused more and more by God's radiant energy. It's theosis. We become more and more like God. Jesus on Mount Tabor isn't, for them, a story of the great exception. It is a story of the great example. Growing more and more in the radiant energy of God, what a different symbol to meditate upon. What a different path and example than many of us may have inherited or heard. Buechner writes, every once and so often, I had to read that a couple times. Even though I selected the reading, when I saw it in the bulletin, I had to check with Chris that it wasn't mistyped, which she rarely makes an error. And yes, indeed, he selected so often. And I think intentionally, lest we think it is so rare. Every once and so often, something so touching, so incandescent, so alive, transfigures the human face that it's almost beyond bearing. It may happen at a birth. Maybe it happens during lovemaking. Maybe even at a death. I was searching my own life for such a moment, and I kept returning to the same moment over and over again. It's a moment that I shared with my father. Many of you know that my father died he died 14 years ago this last month, in February of 2000. And I've shared before that he died of Parkinson's disease. And if you're at all familiar with that, you are familiar with the degeneration and how difficult that is for family and friends and the person with Parkinson's. But the moment I kept returning to was one of the last moments that I shared with him. Because he was declining over the course of years with Parkinson's, we knew when his actual death was approaching because of the degeneration. He was in a nursing home near our family home in Western Pennsylvania, and I was the first one to arrive when we got the news that his death was imminent, that it would happen within a few days. I was the first to arrive. My sisters arrived later that weekend. So Mother and I went to visit Dad in the nursing home. And at that point, he had not been eating for a number of days. He was unable to speak and was basically very still. He was in the dying process. So Mom and I went to the nursing home. And while we were there, I saw his room, and we talked with one another, talked to him. And Mom was noticing that Dad needed a shave. Now, my father was not a fastidious person, but he did like to keep his hair short, and even when he had a beard, he kept himself clean shaven. And he had not been shaved for a number of days, and Mom wanted Dad to have a shave. So she asked me to shave him. Now, if you have ever shaved another person, you realize that is a very intimate act. And that is something I had never done for my father. Now, Dad and I would easily and comfortably hug, even share a kiss on the cheek, but you know, the generational differences being such, there was not a lot of physical intimacy between us. So I said, yes, sure, I'll give him a shave. I figured I'd had more practice than Mom had at shaving a man's face. So I hopes it will. I never actually asked my mother that question directly, but I guess I'm making assumptions, aren't I? So we gently removed the air tube. What's the name for the little tube of air? There you go. I knew you would know, the cannula. So we removed that so that I was able to shave the skin of his face. And while I was doing that, while he was pretty much completely unresponsive at that point, his eyes were open and he was looking up at me. I have no idea whether he was able to recognize me at that point in his dying process. But it only took a few minutes to shave the skin that was showing. And he watched me as I did it. Now, I have always known that I had a lot in common with my mother. This is not an unusual phenomenon for gay men. You know, my personality, my likes and my dislikes, even some of my physical appearance, before the beard, very much in common with my mother. Loved my dad. He was a great guy. He was a guy's guy. He worked in a steel mill in Western Pennsylvania. I mean, if you get it. So there wasn't always a sense of real familiarity, although there was love, we had a lot of differences between us in personality type. So as I was shaving him, he was lying there so still. His skin had already become rather waxen. And there are ways that while he was dying, he no longer looked like the father that I knew, but he was very much still my father. And while I shaved him and as he looked up at me, I was reminded of all of the hours and years that he worked in our garden, the camping vacations that he'd taken us on, the endless choir concerts and high school musicals that he attended to support his children, which he must not have enjoyed very much himself. All of the things that he had given and done for my mother, my sisters, and me. And I was reminded again of how much that he had loved us and how much that I loved him. So touching, so incandescent, so alive, almost beyond bearing. Last year, when we were clearing out our family home in Western Pennsylvania for its selling, I came across a rather strange object that I don't know if you can see it from where you are. Doesn't it look exactly like that? Yes, it is in fact a pencil sharpener that is the shape of an old style razor. Now, when I came across this object, it was in the box. Over years, Mom had accumulated the stuff for the kids. We each had our storage box and had stuff in there. So something I had not seen for years and years and years. When I opened up that box, I found this that I immediately recognized it, but I didn't recognize the story about it. I knew it, but I didn't know exactly why I knew this thing, let alone why it had been saved for more than 40 years in a box. Until Mom reminded me of the story that when I was very, very young, before I even have many memories, she said one of the things I would often do is I would take this and I would stand with Dad at the mirror while he shaved, and I would pretend shave myself with this little fake razor. Who would have imagined the simple act of shaving would frame the love that I shared with my dad? Who would have thought? Epiphanies end. The star in the sky fades, the voice from heaven falls silent. The manifestation may cease, but the aha remains. The glimpse of glory at the transfiguration remains. It's not just an ancient vision that was meant to only confirm who Jesus was. It's a symbol and a story that draws our focus because it liberates us to new life. A radiant, God-infused human face in which all of our history and our hopes are gathered. A glimpse of glory which shows us what we too are to become.